On the 5th of April of 2003, so this is about almost a month after the conflict began, I was driving a Humvee through a city called Karbala when the front left tire of the Humvee that I was driving ran over a roadside bomb. And the three other guys in the Humvee with me were thrown out. I was trapped inside. You know, I was trapped inside of this Humvee for 5 minutes, you know, conscious and seeing my body change. I can give all sorts of details related to that day and what I remember thinking, I remember feeling. But this is what I believe. For a long time, I referred to that day as a tragedy, right? It was a tragedy, like that, wow, it was a traumatic tragedy. And the biggest thing I took away from that day was always like that my life was changed in this way. And over time, the more work that I did, the more that I paused and the more that I reflected, the more that I was able to really kind of extract something even more beautiful from that experience and that day. And what I was able to look at was like, this day is actually a blessing.
This episode is brought to you by Pause, Breathe, Reflect, the app that can help bring more mindfulness to your everyday moments. Imagine what would be possible if more people could live more mindfully. Hey there, my fellow like-hearted humans, it's Michael, and this is the Kintsugi Podcast. This week, we have another inspirational story of connection that I know you'll want to share. It's with another like-hearted human, just like you. He's a dad, a husband, a son, a wounded warrior. He's a softball coach, a dog owner, which we totally dig. He's an author, podcast host. He speaks on all the big stages across the country. He's been on an award-winning soap opera, and people, he won Dancing with the Stars. Pretty cool. But here's the coolest part. He has scars that tell a wonderful story of his grit, his resilience, his tenacity, his spirit of gratitude and community. His scars also tell the story on how he broke the cycle, which he shares more as we get into the conversation. Again, I know you'll want to share this with your colleagues, your friends, your family members. I hope our conversation touches you in a meaningful way. And if it does, I hope you'll leave a kind review for the Kintsugi Podcast so other people can find our community of humans looking to be better humans to other humans. So if you're ready, take a healthy breath in and a slow releasing breath out and get to know J.R. Martinez.
Hey, J.R., brother. How you doing?
I'm well, man. Thank you so much for having me on the podcast. Really admire your work, what you've done, you know, with your platform. And just thank you for sharing, you know, your platform with me.
Yeah, no worries. We got two dudes with a lot of scars. And as you think mentioned on your website, scars tell better stories than tattoos, which yeah. I totally agree with. I don't have any tattoos. I think you have a few, but we definitely have plenty of scars. So
yeah,
I do believe we're going to tell some really good stories.
Well, it's like, I admire, you know, tattoos and art and, you know, and people's bodies. I mean, you know, and, you know, you go up to somebody and you see somebody with some work done and you're like, man, you know, oh, I like that. I like that piece of art. Can you tell me what's the story behind that? And a lot of us feel comfortable approaching somebody with, you know, artwork on their body to ask them that question. Yet, how many people feel comfortable to come up to both you and I and see the scars on our body and say, wow, I admire the scars on your body and how you still carry yourself in this public space. You know, can you tell me more about that? No one's doing that. And so for
me, No one's doing that.
People still, like, despite the visibility that I've been able to obtain in my life, people are still like doing double takes and just kind of staring at me. And, you know, yes, you get some people that come up and say hello and are, you know, recognize you and have a conversation. But for the most part, people are still like, you know, what happened to him? And I'm like, just for God's sakes, I can't say this enough. Just come up to me and just ask me. I'm sorry. Hey, I just, you know, are you comfortable talking about what happened to you? You know, yes, there are going to be some people that aren't. And you know what? They'll tell you that they're not. But I am. And instead of making me feel uncomfortable by staring at me, just come up and connect with me as a human being. You might find something in me that, you know, you like and you can connect with.
I love that, JR. The whispers that we hear as other people whisper about our scars can be deafening. And yeah. I've heard them. And to your point, I do love a great tattoo artist, and my daughters have tattoos and they tell a story. Yeah. Although I don't, but we easily go up to people with tattoos and say, hey, tell me the story about, you know, this piece on your body. But very rarely do people come up to me and say, hey, like, what's the deal there, brother? Yeah. And I am like you, I'm an open book, definitely willing to talk about it because it does tell a great story, which we'll get into. So I like to start off here, although we're into it. I always love to ask, like, how is your central nervous system doing right now?
Oh, that's a deep question. You know, I'm good. I have, all of us are so conditioned to go and to, you know, for a long time growing up, like, you always hear from, you know, people you see in the public eye or people that, you know, are in your family or in your community, whatever, and that are adults and they're working, and you constantly hear that I'm grinding, I'm so busy. And it becomes sort of this level, this stature that at least I was like, I want to say that I'm so busy, that I'm grinding and I'm working all the time and I got this going on and that going on. And that became the thing that I strive for. And I got a taste of that. There was a few years of my life where, guess what? Life was really busy. And I quickly realized, I don't know if I like this so much, right? Like, I don't know if this is necessarily, you know, healthy for me, because for two things. And what it did is it forced me to sort of disconnect with the work. It disconnected me from my core, which was my purpose of being of service. I found myself now just kind of being on autopilot. I wasn't pursuing the work to impact and influence people. I was now pursuing the work to achieve a status, right? To be was somebody that was highly acknowledged and making a lot of money. And when you start operating from that place, when you get sucked into that cycle, nothing good comes from that. And life humbled me and life took it away from me. And I found myself not having a lot of opportunities from a speaking standpoint or an acting standpoint. And I spent a lot of time with my agents and my team trying to figure out, what do I need to do differently, because people aren't calling me and booking me anymore. And everyone kind of was like, well, we don't know. We don't know what happened, right? And instead of just sort of embracing the fact that that's sort of the circle of life, was like, you know, it's like, you're going to have these periods and then life is going to force you into this space where you have to do the very thing that you really talk about, which is pause, breathe, and reflect. And in the midst of me putting all this emphasis out into the world of, like, what do I need to do differently and what do I need to change so I can continue to be relative and busy and make all this money, what it really came down to was I found myself literally sitting in a park with my black lab. And what that did is it, one, forced me to pause. It forced me to just really breathe, and it forced me to reflect. And what I really realized in the midst of doing that for a few months was I was spending so much of this time and energy looking outward for answers, and the answers were always here. But because I didn't stop and I didn't really think about and pay attention to myself, I'm naturally going to feel lost, and so I'm going to need other people to guide me. And so that's a long-winded answer to ultimately get to the root of what I'm saying is, like, I'm in a place now with my daughter who's 12 years old, my son who's going to be 3 soon. My daughter plays travel softball, and, you know, I'm the head coach, and that's busy, but I love it, and I enjoy being out there with her, and I enjoy being out there with her teammates. I enjoy being around my son, and I'm not traveling as much. I'm being very selective about how many events I want to take on, what events do I want to take on, what feels right from a group standpoint, how many events a year feels right for me. And so I'm in this place where I've been spending a lot of time kind of reconnecting with myself. I started going to yoga again. Yoga was something that has proved to be very beneficial for me, not just from a physical standpoint, but just from a mental and emotional standpoint. The exercise is just breathing. And, you know, I do a variety of yoga. So I do the hot yoga. I go to yin yoga, which is essentially a stretch class. And you're holding these poses for, you know, 3 to 8 minutes, depending on the pose. And it's uncomfortable. It's not painful. It should never be painful, but it's uncomfortable. And in the moment while you're in it, you just think to yourself, my God, this is the worst thing I can ever do. And the thing that gets you through that is reconnecting to your breath. Is literally breathing. And as the more you breathe, the more you connect with that. One, it just reminds you you're okay and you're alive. You got this. The second thing it does, it allows your body to just relax and just settle. Before you know it, now the stretch is, now you're in the stretch. Now it's not so, because your body's conditioned to protect you, right? So your body's tensing up. Your body's like, oh my God, what are you doing to me? Like, no, no, no. And so the more you breathe, you remind yourself and you remind your body, we got this, we're good, and you settle in. And so I'm in a space now where I'm identifying some things that honestly that I probably need to lean into a little bit more. There's some emotions, some thoughts that kind of, nothing harmful, you know, but things that have just kind of surfaced and reoccurring that I realize I need to pay attention to those things. That's maybe something I got to lean into. And I think that's the beauty of the stage of life that I'm in right now. And I've learned to appreciate this phase of life because I know my life is never, ever going to consistently be this way. I know that there's going to be something that's going to kick and I'm going to find myself busy and I'm going to find myself in that roller coaster. So I use this time to rejuvenate and to really pour back into myself, into the things that matter to me.
That's so cool, JR. What I hear in your response is the importance about breathing into things that are uncomfortable for us, like just allowing the body to relax, because I know that experience in yoga. Just the stretch feels, there's a discomfort to it. And you, with our breath, we can allow the body to relax and then you settle into that stretch. But I also hear a good sense of groundedness and alignment as far as where you are in life, which is really cool to hear. So yeah. I have another question for you, because we love a good how'd you meet story, because Kintsugi is about connection. Mm-hmm. So I always love to ask how do our guests meet their partners, the people in their lives. So how did you meet your wife, Diana?
Yeah, so we worked together. So when I joined...
Oh, wow. Yeah, interesting.
Yeah, so when I joined All My Children, she worked on the show. She, at the time, was the executive assistant to the executive producer of the show. And then, so we spent a lot of time, you know, talking, because I would always have to go through her to get to the executive producer and have those conversations. And, I was always a guy that, you know, listen, I was a guy that just kind of came off the street and got an opportunity to act on this show that was well respected with some incredible actors. And I never necessarily perceived myself to be in the space where I didn't necessarily know how to connect with a lot of the actors. So the people that I connected with were the crew, were, you know, I mean, those are kind of like my people. Like, those are the people,
the back of the house people.
Yeah, like the props guys, the camera guys. I mean,
people serving.
People up in the office. Like, those are kind of my vibe. And so when I connected with her, it was just one of those things where it was just like there was a natural friendship that just sort of sparked. And we spent a lot of time together. I was always in her office goofing off. And she remembers the first time I called her, because before we got married, her last name was Gonzalez. And, you know, she's Puerto Rican and black. And she recalls the first conversation that we had over the phone when I called her, and she was like, is Diana Gonzalez speaking? And I was like, Gonzalez? That's not how you say Gonzalez, because she doesn't speak Spanish. And I was like, that's not how you say Gonzalez. And I was like, it's Gonzalez. And I was like, you know, being typical JR, like a clown. And she was like, who is this, like, over here trying to correct me on how to say my last name? And that's her, like, first impression of me. And she said she was nervous because she knew that I had scars. She didn't want to make me feel uncomfortable, but she wasn't sure how she was going to react to it. And when after that first phone conversation, she realized, we're going to be fine. He's going to roll into my office. Whenever I meet him, it's going to be completely fine. It's not going to be a big deal at all. So we worked together for a couple of years. We were friends for those 2 years. We spent a lot of time doing things together. It evolved. So the show was in New York, and then it moved to LA. And so when we moved to LA, we ended up spending a lot more time together because we didn't really know that many people there. We just kind of all hung out. And then it just sort of evolved, Michael, into this thing of where her and I were doing things, and it was very much like, it felt like, are you guys like flirting? Are you guys like already in a relationship?
Yeah, like what are we calling this?
Yeah,
JR, what are we calling this? Are we a thing? Are we?
Neither one of us were like really intended or really put any thought behind that. We were just more just like enjoying each other's company and just kind of going.
Sure.
But everybody else was kind of like, what's going on? And then finally one day I was the one that was bold enough to be like, you know, this is kind of my roundabout way. And I was like, do you ever think of, you know, me in a different way? And she was like, no, what do you mean? No, you're my friend. No. And I was like, and then we just started talking about it. And I just kind of came out and asked her and we started dating. And it was a big leap for her because the way she looked at me was we had such a great connection on a friendship level that her thought process was if we took it to another place and it doesn't work out, then her mindset was I lose a friend and a really good friend. And I was like, I think we'll be fine. You know, that's sort of the way JR just kind of goes through life. It's like, I think it'll work out. Let's just go for it. And granted, listen, I'll be transparent. There were some bumps in the road for sure. It is public information. Like if you were to Google me, that we did have a breakup and after our daughter was born, and there was a period that we had to spend apart, but there was a lot of things that I needed to identify about myself individually. There were things, because you talk about connection, as much as I was connection, like I was having connection, I really wasn't having the depth of connection that you really want to have with an individual that you're going to have this level of like life with. And I was sort of surface, and that was evident in a lot of things that I did. I mean, everything, I was sort of playing it safe in a lot of ways. And so I needed to sort of step away. I needed to do my work. She needed to do some work on her end. And then after, you know, we did that, we were able to come together. Now here we are married and, you know, have another child. And, you know, honestly, like, this is my happy place when I'm with the three of them and, you know, nothing else really matters and exists in the world.
That is so awesome. Can we go back to your childhood? Can you bring us back to where you grew up and what that was like?
Oh, man. And I appreciate you, you know, taking me back to that place, because I think a lot of times people are so quick to go to the period of when I was injured and what happened to me overseas.
Sure.
In the military. And granted, I understand that's a big part of, you know, the story and that people want to know and unpack that. But I always tell people, is like, if you want me to start there, you're doing a disservice to the first 19 years of my life, because, you know, people always like to ask me about how I'm so resilient. And I always tell people, like, resiliency is something that it's a practice. It's a conditioning. It's not something that you just, it's not something that you just come into a room and hit a light switch and it's on. Suddenly you're resilient. Yeah. No,
you don't buy it in a $99 course.
No, it is something that you have to, the way you really get to this place is you have to spend a lot of time pausing and reflecting. But, you know, you realize over the course of your life that, life has been conditioned in me to be resilient. Like, I have been going through it already. And when you have those moments of pause and reflect, then you can sort of applaud yourself, and then you can pat yourself on the back, and then you can say, when other adversities present themselves, I'm good, I got this, and you just go. And so, you know, listen, life was challenging growing up. My mother is from Central America, El Salvador. My mother came here, like a lot of immigrants, looking for an opportunity to just, honestly, her thought process was she was going to make a little bit of money and then go back to Central America. That was her plan. And then she met my old charismatic dad, and boom, here comes JR, changing all the plans. And then my dad had different plans when I was 9 months old, and he left, and he wasn't in the picture. So my mother was left raising me by herself. And my mother was a hurt person. My mother has, at that point when she had me, when I was an infant, had experienced a lot of trauma. And unfortunately, you know, as a woman, as someone that didn't have a lot of resources, and just culturally being Hispanic, we don't talk about our feelings. We just bury it, and you're in survival mode. And my mother was very much in survival mode for most of my life. And I saw my mother fall into some really abusive relationships. And, you know, since I was like 4 years old, for a long time. And men putting their hands on my mother, men being verbally and mental, like, just abusive. And, you know, and I was born in Louisiana, lived there for 9 years of my life, and then moved to Arkansas when I was 9. And that was challenging for me, making that adjustment. I was by myself. I didn't have anybody else around. It was just my mother and I. And I found myself getting picked on a lot. I found myself, you know, there'd be gangs, groups of, you know, people that would want to pick on me and fight me, and they would. And, you know, I couldn't really do anything. And I just kind of felt so isolated and didn't feel like I was a part of a community and didn't really have any deep connection, and was eager to find that and wanted something that I could have. And listen, I'm only sharing this because it is part of my truth. It's not an intention to, you know, really expose anybody or make anybody, but, you know, my mother was, like I said, she was a hurt person, and my mother was trying to do the best that she could. And, you know, my mom, you know, I'm 41 years old, and I think that you speak to anybody that is around this age, you can sit around and talk about, like, oh man, remember when your mom, you know, whooped your ass, or your dad?
Oh, absolutely. And I still remember the sound of the drawer opening in the kitchen, and coming out of that drawer was a wooden spoon. And so I'm in my 50s. I got some years on you, a couple, but I still remember that sound.
Yeah. And I mean, and look, but the minute that you started talking about it, you sort of had a smile on your face, because it's sort of like this code and this thing that we just, at this age and older,
we made it through, just like, brother.
Yeah. This is the way it was. But the difference was that my mother was a hurt person, and my mother would, when she would begin to discipline me, yeah, she did the belt, yeah, she did the switches, all the, you know, stuff that is funny, and, you know, we all sort of connect on that level. But it got to a point where my mother would tie my hands and my feet, and, you know, like, she with a rope, and she would, like, literally just whoop me. And I remember she let the, you know, there was a guy she was seeing at the time, and he put his hands on me. And, you know, and I remember my uncle, my mother's brother, one day was staying, he was like, in this period, he was like staying with us. And he came into the room one day and he said, like, stop it. You're going to kill that boy. And, you know, I'd go to school and I'd have, you know, these, you know, marks on my body, on my back. And, you know, obviously I wanted to protect my mom. And so I would go into gym class and change in a corner. You know, did I do anything that really warranted that? No, but my mom was just angry because of all the things that she had been exposed to, and just took it out on me. And that was the space where she can sort of allow that to just be released and go. And, you know, I never really sort of had any remorse towards my mom. I just kind of was like, this is it. And I know that she was a hurt woman. I remember being around 12 years old one day, and she was standing over me, and I just had my hands up protecting my face. And I remember looking up at my mother as she sort of pulled that end of the rope back and getting ready to hit me again. And I remember looking in her eyes and just thinking to myself, like, what she's doing right now has nothing to do with me. I remember feeling that and thinking that. And so, you know, listen, I mean, all that compounded with what I was experiencing outside of the home, I found myself getting suspended from school a lot. I found myself, you know, being suspended for 3, 5, 7 days at a time. And do you think that anybody from the education system at the time interjected to ask me, what's going on, young man? Let's work through this. What's going on? No, They just moved me along. They just moved me to the next grade, moved me to the next grade, just passed me down, let me become someone else's problem. And unfortunately, that happens way too often. And literally, I just, right before my senior year of high school, we moved to Georgia. I can get into this whole story, but I'll, for the sake of time, just sort of spare you. But I had been eager and itching to leave Arkansas. Didn't really feel like it was a place for me. And we had a family, a friend that lived in Georgia. And so we went to Georgia and I went to my senior year of high school was in Georgia. I completed it there and I loved it. It was great. It was incredible. I had community. I connected with people. People embraced me. It was a completely 180 to where I was the previous, you know, almost 9 years, and graduated high school. And that was the first time I remember when I got to this school in Georgia. It was probably 2-3 weeks. It was within the first month of me being in the school year. And I remember getting called to the office. And I was like, oh, wow, this is familiar to me. I know I always go to the office.
This can't be a good thing.
And, yeah. And you know, and in Arkansas, there was the capital punishment, like where my mother agreed to, if I got in trouble, that I can go to the principal's office and they put out that wooden paddle and pow, pow, give me some licks and then send me right back on my way. I mean, I was okay. So I'm like, what did I do now? And I remember I get called into the counselor's office, one of the counselors, and he sat down with me and he said, man, what's going on? He says, I'm looking at your transcript. I'm looking at your grades. He says, I'm looking at, you know, all of this stuff. He's like, what's going on? And that was like the first time I could recall somebody really sitting down and asking me what's going on. He says, at this rate.
And really seeing you.
Yeah. He's like, at this rate, you're not going to graduate on time. He says, do you want to graduate on time? I was like, yes. He was like, okay. He's like, do you want your grades to be like this? I was like, no. He's like, okay. He's like, so if you really want to graduate on time and you want to get your grades up, this is a plan. And he's like, you're going to have to go to night school. So here I am, a senior, and I'm going to school during the day, and I think it was like 3 days a week I would go to night school. And in between playing sports and in between anything else that I was doing, I was driving over to a different campus to take classes, you know, to make up my credits. And I graduated on time. And that simple act just did so much for me. And you just don't realize that really what a lot of people that are navigating this world, all they want is for someone just to, at some point, to just ask them, what's going on? What's going on? And if you really look at my life, of all the things that I've been through over the last 41 years, the turning points of my life have been when people have stopped and said, hey, let's talk. What's going on? Because I was very much on the trajectory of, I could have easily followed and fell into the trap of what everyone believed I was going to ultimately be because of the product of my environment. And then also after my injury, people suspected, as we suspect a lot of veterans, this is what's going to come of their life. This is what's going to happen. I've clearly have gone the other direction. And, you know, it's just all it takes is just someone stopping for a second and leaning in. And then when you finally get to a happy and healthy place, now you have to be the person that is willing to stop and, hey, say, hey, what's going on?
In so many ways, JR, he saw some of your emotional scars that came from being on the receiving end of a hurt person hurting people, mm-hmm. right? Hurt people. And if you're on the receiving end of that hurt, it still hurts like a son of a gun. Yeah. And he saw that. And to your point, as we talked about earlier, like people see our scars, certainly our physical ones. They may not see our emotional ones, but when we have that one person in our lives that can just stop and say, hey, what's up? Yeah. What's going on?
And the thing someone recently said this to me, and they said, and I don't know sort of where it comes from, but someone made a comment in a conversation I was having recently with someone said how your environment can change your DNA. And after this person said this, I marinated on it for a while, and I was like, oh, that's interesting. And the more that I thought about it, even though I haven't really, you know, I haven't taken a dive into it to really kind of understand the theory behind that. But ultimately what I gather on the surface, what I gather from that is, I think about when I was man, I 5-6 years old. I remember my mother was seeing this guy, and he was probably the closest thing to what I ever called a dad. And he was also the abusive guy, but he was there. He was consistently there. And I looked up to this guy. I kind of feared the guy. Like, he was sort of this intimidating figure. And I remember he would sit in the living room of our home, and he would play the piano, and he would sing Spanish love songs. And I would sit next to him, and I would just watch him. And Spanish was my first language. And until I got into school, then, you know, obviously English, you know, took over. And I would just watch him and admire, you know, that he was singing and he was playing the piano. And so then I started singing with him. Well, then he would take me to this hole-in-the-wall bar down the street from our apartment complex, and he would play the piano while I would sing these Spanish love songs about breakup and heartache and all this stuff, things I had no clue about. And I'm sitting there singing and dancing, and all these people that are heavily intoxicated are like, he's amazing, he's so good, right? And, you know, the reason I tell that is because that's my DNA. That's who I was born to be. So when people ask me, are you comfortable on stage? Do you ever get nervous? Were you nervous when you were on dancing? Are you comfortable? I was 100% in my element because that's who I was born to be. Now, the stage is probably not, I don't think life ever really anticipated that the stage was going to be that kind of stage. Maybe it's just a stage of the dynamic in my family. Maybe it's the stage of the dynamic within the organization that I work for, which maybe consists of a team of 10 people, right? Like, life obviously took a different turn, and it's a bigger stage, if you will. But nonetheless, my DNA was always intended for me to be that person. And my environment constantly, over time, kept trying to change that. And it did. It did change it. But there would be these little sort of these beautiful moments where people would see me and would say, let's try to get that DNA back to the surface. And the more that they did that and they reached and they asked questions, guess what? They got to me. And they were able to get the JR, that who was always intended to be this person, who always had the potential to be this individual, and not allow my environment to completely change me, and instead me change the narrative of the environment that I came from.
Absolutely. You know, when you think about how we experience life, it's through our senses.
Yeah.
You know, so our environment, the people we hang with, what we see when we look out the window, when we leave our house, what we hear, what we smell, what we taste, you know, all of it shapes who we are. So you can take two different people and put them in, you know, different environments, and you obviously different outcomes, and you can take that same person, put them in a better environment, it can change. You can put that same person in a like less than desirable environment, and you can see change. So
yep.
I'm really tracking with you as far as like how our environment shapes our DNA, certainly how it shapes our lives. So now, can you bring us up to the time when you're serving? You're in Afghanistan, and certainly you've gone through a lot of trials and challenges, and you've already had to like tap into your resilience just to get through childhood and school, and now you face another test.
Yeah.
Can you share that with us?
Yeah. So, well, I was actually in Iraq, but, you know, so I joined the military pretty much right after high school, a few months after high school, and my thought process was I was going to go to the Army, and I was gonna only do 3 years, but the 3 years that I was gonna be in, boy, I was gonna be in it, and I was gonna be an infantryman, and so, you know, which is front lines, one of you know, I mean, all jobs in the military are obviously, you know, have their, you know, dangers, and but I, you know, infantry is definitely one of them. You're putting yourself right there at the front of it all, and you know, on the 5th of April of 2003, so this is about almost a month after the conflict began, I was driving a Humvee through a city called Karbala when the front left tire of the Humvee that I was driving ran over a roadside bomb. And the three other guys in the Humvee with me were thrown out. I was trapped inside. And I was trapped inside of this Humvee for 5 minutes, you know, conscious and seeing my body change. I mean, parts of my body.
Probably the longest 5 minutes of your life.
Oh my God. I mean, yeah. I mean, if we were to pause right now, you and I just stood here and, or sat here in silence. I mean, the listener right now is like, what happened? What happened? They're probably checking their phones or they're checking their internet connection.
And that was just a few seconds, right?
And that was just 10 seconds, right? Like when you really stop, and that's what a lot of us have trouble, right? When you really stop and you just let time be, a lot of us, oh my God, you're like, I've been sitting with myself for too long. How long was that? And you're like, well, that was only, you know, a minute, if that, right? I mean, that was 10 seconds. And so when you have 5 minutes where you're going through this excruciating pain and experiencing what I experienced, obviously it feels amplified. And listen, I can give all sorts of details related to that day and what I remember thinking, I remember feeling. But I this is what I believe. For a long time, I referred to that day as a tragedy. Right, it was a tragedy, like that. Wow, it was a traumatic tragedy. And the biggest thing I took away from that day was always like that my life was changed in this way. And over time, the more work that I did, the more that I paused, and the more that I reflected, the more that I was able to really kind of extract something even more beautiful from that experience and that day. And what I was able to look at was like, this day is actually a blessing. It's not a tragedy. It's a blessing. It's a blessing, and it this is something that I took away from that. And what I took away was, as I was coming in and out of consciousness, and during those 5 minutes, I remember my eyes would get really heavy and they would close. And in the midst of my eyes being closed, oddly enough, I didn't feel pain. I didn't hear the chaos of things going on around me outside of my Humvee. I was relaxed. I was connecting with my breath. I was connecting with my thoughts. And I would tell myself, I can't keep my eyes closed because if I do, that's it. I'm giving up. And I would breathe and I can hear my breath. I can literally feel it coming through my lungs, my airway. And then I would just open my eyes and I would continue to just scream and yell and just fight for life. And believing and hoping that somebody would pull me out. And sure enough, they did. And for me, years later, I was able to really tap back into that and realize that is what I should be focused on. That's what I should be extracting from this day of 5th of April of 2003 and this experience, is that when I feel like things are chaotic and overwhelming, I need to find this opportunity in this space where I can just close my eyes, just connect with my breath, just feel myself breathing. One, I can tell myself that breath was reminding me that I'm alive. And as long as there's air coming through my lungs, there is a chance. There is a chance. And I'm capable. I'm capable and I'm capable. And then open your eyes and get out there in the world and go just attack it. And you have to do this frequently. And I do this periodically, even till this day in my life. I mean, I'll do it. Obviously, if I'm driving, I can't close my eyes, but I'll turn off the radio, turn off the podcast, turn off no calls, no nothing, and I'll just drive. And I'll just be with myself. I get on a plane, I close my eyes. People think I'm asleep. No, I'm just sitting here. I need a moment to reconnect with myself. Right before I get on a stage, I do the same thing. When I come off of the stage, I do the same thing. I sit in different spaces and I just close my eyes and I just connect with myself and I block out everything else. I don't worry about anything else. I don't think of what's the solution. I don't think about that. I just literally, in that moment of my eyes being closed, I just remind myself, you're breathing, you're alive, you're okay. We got this.
All right. It seems like a good time to take a moment to pause, breathe, reflect. And when we come back, JR will share more of his story and the power of gratitude. So let's do this. Let's take 3 generous inhales and releasing exhales together. Wherever you may be, come into a comfortable position. If you like, you can close your eyes, but if you're moving, eyes open, please. Safety first, after all. and we'll drop in. Breathe up fully through your nose if you can, and bring your awareness to the breath. Notice your lungs expanding and the energy of your breath. And now release the breath, relaxing into the moment. You might even notice that you're sinking a little bit deeper into your chair. Let's take a couple more. Nice, healthy breath in. And a releasing breath out. And one last time. Healthy breath in. And a releasing breath out. It's that simple. To connect with the breath and the body and have a moment to pause, breathe, reflect. And you can find so many wonderful meditations and breathwork patterns on my app. And for your first year, you can pay whatever you can. So you can bring more mindfulness to your everyday moments and prevent that bad moment from turning into a bad day or longer. All right, now that we've had our PBR break, let's come back to our conversation with JR. And he'll share more about his recovery in the power of gratitude.
Because then also the reason, another good reason you should be doing that is because all of us are, you know, triggered people. And despite what you've experienced in your life, there's things that trigger us nonstop. And so you could easily find yourself in a space where, you know, you're triggered and you're like in this, it sends you into this space of where you're like, oh my God, like, ah. And so for me, I like to use that opportunity to be like, okay, no, body. We don't have to be triggered. We don't have to be guarded. I appreciate you for trying to protect me, but we're okay. Right. So it's a way to remind your body and retrain your body to think differently and feel differently.
And to feel safe. I love what you share, JR, because at my accident scene, the EMTs basically told me, just try to breathe. Mm-hmm. And to your point, there was a period of time where I was coming in and out of consciousness, and my mantra was like, stay awake.
Yeah.
At that point, keep your eyes open, because I thought if I fell asleep, that was my language, if I lost consciousness, I might never regain it. And so I just focused in on my breath.
Yeah.
And that was the start of all of it. What was the rehab like for you? I know we both went through skin graft surgeries. And what I've shared with people is that the actual place where they put the graft, that's one thing. But the donor site or the host site where they take your skin to make the skin graft, that was some of the worst pain I've ever experienced in my life.
And
I didn't know if you could talk a little bit about what you had to go through in your rehab, because I imagine there were days where you felt pretty good and there were some days where you were like, man, I don't know if I got it in me.
Let me tell you, like, a simple thing that I did that I had to recalibrate my thought process that I think allowed me to manage what I was going through was I had to recalibrate my mind. And what I mean by that is I had to eliminate this concern, because I fell into this negative space because I was so worried about the rest of my life and
identity in all aspects.
And I put a lot of emphasis in that. And the more that I thought about it, all it did was just trigger me and make me spiral down even more. And so one day I realized I got to get away from that. Because the more that I put all this pressure on myself to think about that, I'm not doing that well. Like, it's not going to be good. And so I had to get away from that. And I did. I got away from that. But what did I replace it with? Instead of worried about the long term and thinking of the long term, what I ultimately ended up doing was just thinking about the short term and finding gratitude in this space that I'm in right now. finding something to be grateful for. So then my intention became every day, find something that something that was good today. What was good today? And despite what people might think and the circumstances that I was in and you've been in and other people been in, there was always something. There was always something that was good. Like, you know, one day I couldn't grab a fork, you know, to be able to hold it and pick it up to feed myself. Well, guess what? The next day I was able to hold it now. I didn't get it all the way up to my mouth, but I was able to hold it. You know, one day I did maybe half of a lap walking around because I had to learn how to walk again. And maybe the next day I did, you know, three quarters of a lap. You know, like there was always something that there was progress. And I just hung on to that. And that's what kind of made this manageable, not easy, but manageable. And I mean, listen, you're absolutely right. I mean, yes, there's the area that's the damaged area that needs, you know, the graft, but there's the host site that where they take the skin from that is obviously very painful because you're now awake and everything is alive, all the nerves, everything, and you're feeling it as after they take it off, you're feeling that, you're experiencing that area now healing, and the body's so incredible. I mean, it really is incredible.
It really is, isn't it?
It's so freaking incredible. And that's the other thing I'm constantly doing is just saying thank you to my body because of not only what it's been through, but what I've chosen to put it through even more so after my injury. Like, you know, I put it through a lot and yet it still shows up for me, but the body's an incredible thing. And you know, yeah, I mean, I spent almost 2.5 years in the hospital. I mean, I had to have eye releases because with burns, your skin contracts. So obviously with my head and my forehead being burned, it was in my face, it was pulling essentially my eyelids and in different directions, which left my eyes open. And even when I would sleep, my eyes would still be open and people would freak out. And the doctors are like, we got to do these releases so that way you can, when you close your eyes, there could be some coverage because that's how you moisturize your eyes. If not, your eyes [S2] Sure. [S1] Are going to dry out. You can go blind, like all these things. So I had a lot of that, had a lot of occupational therapy, a lot of hand releases, obviously cosmetic stuff. You know, had tissue expanders put into my chest, tissue expanders put in my head. I got to a point where when I was having a day, I would just allow myself to have that day. I just gave myself grace, and I would go to my room and I would just like, you know what? I'm just going to have this moment. I need to have this moment, whatever it is. I'm upset because this is my reality and I got to deal with this. And okay, I'm upset. I can cry. It's okay. I can be pissed off at the world. I can say, poor me. I can allow myself to do that. But then I would be like, I'm not going to allow myself to do that for more than a couple of days though. And so like after a couple of days, I'd be like, all right, now let me put myself back into the world. And that's what I would do with no real goal, no real intention, not really looking for anything, just more like, let me just go back out into the world. And the more that I just put myself out into the world, the more that I realized the world, as long as I was open to it, would give me what I needed to get through. And that became something that happened periodically in my life where I started to, you know, we spend a lot of time, you hear people really talking about data, right? You hear companies that, you know, you buy products from talk about data. They want to understand, you know, the efficiency of how they do things. They want to understand the client. They want to understand what the client wants. They're constantly gathering data so they can better serve you, make more money, operate for a very long time and not just have this short, you know, window of where they could be successful. Well, the thing that I realize is that we individually are brands ourselves and we equally are gathering data. And so all these experiences that I've had, all I've been doing is essentially gathering data. And so when people say, how are you so optimistic? And I'm like, well, because I have so much data and evidence that support that I need to feel this way, that I have to show up this way, because somehow it always ends up shaking out. Like it ends up working itself out. Now, being hopeful and being optimistic are two different things, right? Hope is sort of like this, you know, sort of like, I hope it's going to work. Like there's no data, there's no evidence. There's nothing really tangible that you're building this thought process off of. You're just hopeful that something will work out. I'm optimistic because I have enough data and I have enough evidence an experience in my life that life has constantly reminded me, this will shake out. You just got to stay with it. And so I just started learning. The more I put myself into the world, the more the world was going to give me what I needed. And it would give me what I needed. Will it sustain me for the rest of my life? No. It'll get me through the next month, the next 4 months, the next 6 months, the next year. And then there will be something else that will happen that will now give me what I need that'll sustain me for another period of time. And then the more you start to have these little moments, right? These aren't the moments that are going to make a bio. These aren't the moments that people are going to have me on their podcast to talk about those. Because in the grand scheme of my life and what I've accomplished, this, no one cares about that. No one even really knows about that. But if, the more you put all those little moments together, guess what? Now you have a solid foundation that you're building something on. And that's what I want people to really pay attention to, is like, instead of looking for this big reveal, this big billboard that gives you this sign and the revelation, you need to pay attention to the things that are literally happening on a micro level right in front of you that you are experiencing, that are, that you're just overlooking. That's where the lesson and the fruit and the sweetness of life really lies.
That is so good. I totally believe, much like you, JR, that life happens in the moments between all those bigger moments. So
100%.
Those are the moments that I actually geek out about, that moment where you had, where you could grab your fork or spoon for the first time and maybe bring it up halfway and then, you know, bring it up all the way.
Yeah.
Just those little moments of gratitude. For me, it was getting that processed guava juice from the cafeteria. Like that dude, that made my day. Like when they were serving guava juice, and it wasn't the real stuff. It was totally processed. It was gross, but it tasted so good. Do you know the Buddhist parable, first arrow, second arrow?
Mm-mm.
So when you were sharing, it really brought it to mind. So it's a story of a warrior who goes into the woods. And as he's traveling in the woods, he gets hit by an arrow, but he doesn't see where the arrow came from. And of course, that arrow causes great pain.
Mm-hmm.
He's hurt. He's bleeding. He's in agony. So first arrow moments happen in life all the time. Like it happened to you. It happened to me. The second arrow is the arrow that we shoot at ourselves. And this warrior begins to shoot a second arrow at himself, ruminating on the pain. Who shot this arrow? How can I get back at them? Adding fuel to the fire. And so these second arrows that you talked about, you alluded to, like you could have a moment, right? You could have a day, and you just need to give yourself grace. In that moment of grace, you are saying, hey, I'm not going to shoot a second arrow at myself because it's not going to make it better, right? And so we tend to shoot second arrows at ourselves. Things happen in life external to who we are, and then we add to the pain by shooting arrows at ourselves. And it just, as I like to say, it takes a bad moment and stretches it into a bad day, mm-hmm. or even longer. And yeah. So I called the day of my accident my last bad day for a couple different reasons, that being one of them. Mm-hmm. So one question I have for you, you know, we could probably talk all day long. And so it's a podcast, so we eventually have to wrap it up sooner or later. You've done so much in your life. You've been through so much through your childhood, serving your country, which I thank you for.
Thank you.
You've been on Dancing with the Stars. You've been on an award-winning soap. You speak in front of big companies. When you think about all that you've done, what are you most proud of?
That I broke the cycle.
Yeah.
You know, yeah, those things are cool. Those things, you know, those things are great. You think, you know, my daughter wasn't even born when I was on Dancing. You think she cares that I was on Dancing?
No.
You think she cares that I was in front of, that, you know, I get to go and speak in front of, I mean, maybe at some point she will maybe get to appreciate that and be like, you know, there's something cool about it. No. What she cares about is that, and what my son cares about, and what my wife care about is that I'm here, and I'm present, and I'm connected, and I'm active, and I get a lot of things wrong as a husband and as a father. I get a lot of things wrong.
I'm right there with you, brother.
And I try to spend a lot of time reflecting and identifying what should I have done differently, things that I don't like about, you know, the way I responded in certain situations, how could I sort of make amends and apologizing to my daughter, you know, and or having that conversation with my wife. You know, if I were, if today was my last day on this earth, you know, my daughter, my wife wouldn't talk about all the things that I got to do that are in the bio. They would talk about how I care deeply about my family, and I care deeply about, you know, showing up for them and being the best version of myself for them, because they deserve that. And I deserve that. And it took me a while to identify that I also am entitled to have that experience. And, you know, my environment, try to change me. And I looked at it and said, the hell with you. I'm going to be the one that's going to be in control, and I'm going to dictate what I want my life to be. And so the fact that I'm a cycle breaker, man, that above anything is, I think, what I'm most fond and proud of.
That is so cool. You're putting a beautiful ripple into the world. We'll end here. We'll end with a bit of gratitude. You want to play along with me?
Yeah, let's do it.
All right. So recently I went to New York City in Central Park, and I just asked a bunch of strangers. I came up to them and said, hey, today is a big day of kindness. It was the anniversary of my accident. And part of our conversation, I asked them to name as many things as they could that they were grateful for in 23 seconds.
Oh.
All right. So I'm going to give you 23 seconds.
Okay.
To name as many things or as many people that you're grateful for.
Okay.
And you can begin whenever you want.
Okay. All right. So 23 seconds, right?
23 seconds. I'll watch the clock, and you just, like, let the gratitude flow.
Okay. All right, here we go. I'm grateful for my life. I'm grateful for my mother. I'm grateful for coaches when I was a kid that were positive influences on me. I'm grateful for the community that I lived in that showed up for me. I'm grateful for my wife. I'm grateful for my kids. I'm grateful for my best friend, Dan. I'm grateful for the experiences that I've had. I'm grateful for the ability that I have discovered in myself and what I love most about myself, which is the opportunity to connect with people and to always show up and listen.
Awesome. 23 seconds goes pretty quickly.
It does, man. Gratitude. God, I need more time. Yeah.
More time. The list could have gone on and on, but
oh my God.
Just reflecting on the list, you know, what was amazing, and this is what we do. There was a lot of gratitude for the people in your life, mm-hmm. the people who have traveled this life with you and how they've impacted you and how they've rippled into you. And yeah. I just want to give you props for breaking the cycle as you have and rippling something worth rippling into the world and helping other people see that it's possible to get through some of our darkest moments and really shine and to see the beauty in all of our scars. So thanks for being here, JR, and thanks for everything that you're doing out there in the world.
Well, Michael, thank you so much. It was a pleasure, man, and thank you for what you're doing. First of all, I got to commend you, you know, on all the things that you've done, but I think probably the most bravest thing that you've accomplished is that you managed somehow to go to New York City and walk up to a bunch of strangers and actually have a conversation with them. New Yorkers don't get down like that, man. I'm married to one. My wife's from born and raised New York City girl, so trust me, I've lived in New York, and I know those New Yorkers when you start walking up to them like that. You know, but I always refer to New Yorkers as pineapples, right? You look at a pineapple, and you're like, how do I hold this thing? How do I pick it up? Because it's so prickly, and it's going to, like, poke you, and it's not going to feel good. That's what New Yorkers are like. But once you sort of make that one cut, once you take that one little bite, they're sweet on the inside. They just like to put up
absolutely.
That tough exterior.
I come from the Empire State, and I'm right there with you. And to be fair, there are a couple people that gave me a friendly New York wave as I approached them, but there were a lot of like-hearted humans there in the park, and that was really awesome. So, thanks again for
being
here.
Thank you so much, man. It was such a pleasure. I really enjoyed this conversation, and just applaud you for what you're doing in the world. And you know, obviously always glad we're connected, and, you know, let's obviously stay in touch, and anything I can do to ever help you, you know, feel free to reach out.
Will do.
Wow. What a story, right? I hope our conversation touched you in a meaningful way. And I hope you'll share it with others and leave a kind review if JR spoke to you. I just loved that he talked about gratitude being one of his secret sauces, if you will. And at the end, when he shared in 23 seconds things he was grateful for, it was basically the people in his life. And I find that to be true when I ask others that question, to name as many things as possible in 23 seconds that you're grateful for. It's all about the people. And if you want to do it and film yourself, send me the video and I'll share it so we can put a powerful ripple of gratitude into the world. So JR, again, thank you for being the person you are, a like-hearted human looking to be a better human to other humans. I appreciate you. I also appreciate you for listening, because I know time is your most precious resource. So the fact that you carved out some time to be with us in our Kintsugi community means a lot. So I thank you. If you ever want to talk about how to prevent a bad moment from turning into a bad day or longer, or how you might bring pause, breathe, reflect, and mindfulness into your work environment, there's a calendar link in the show notes. And I'll also put all the different ways you can connect with JR in the show notes as well. So remember, between now and the next time we come together, if you have a challenging moment, because that's life, remember to slow down, come back to your breath, and know that you've got this and we've got you. Together, we'll put a positive ripple into the world. So until our next story of connection here on the Kintsugi podcast, have fun storming the castle. This episode is brought to you by Pause, Breathe, Reflect, the app that can help bring more mindfulness to your everyday moments. Imagine what would be possible if more people could live more mindfully.